Hey, you guys, it's Flickers of Fear time again, my own little movie review show where I talk about a couple of movies that I've seen in the past week and wanted to talk about. So let's get started. I had been really anticipating watching this movie. It came out, I guess it premiered at Sundance back in 2020, and it had got like a lot of buzz about it. And because one of the characters in it is based on Shirley Jackson, who was one of my very favorite horror writers, I was super into seeing this, and I love Elizabeth Moss, who plays her. She's a great actress, other than her being a Scientologist, but okay, I'll forgive that. But so the movie is called Shirley. Now, this is not a horror movie. It's not, I don't even know what genre I would call this necessarily. It's sort of like, I've seen it called a gothic drama. I've seen it called a loose biopic, which I would argue about it being called a biopic. I keep seeing it called that, but it's really not that. It is based on real people, but there's a lot of fictional elements in there. So I'm not really sure. And it does have some weird, like, psychological horror elements to it, I guess. As I said, it's sort of a genreless film, but it really does have, because Shirley Jackson was a horror writer, and because this movie is almost kind of like talking about a particular period in her life and then sort of filming it through the lens of one of her own stories, as though she was kind of like writing the story about herself, or it's kind of more about her inspiration, I suppose, than being about her actual life, because a lot of stuff was changed, which I'll get into in a little bit. But that said, it's like it just has this great, like, creepy kind of atmosphere too, which I really dug. And actually, I really got sucked into the movie when I was first watching it. And then the more I, the longer it went on, like, the more I was sucked into it. And then after I finished watching it, I liked it more. Like, the more I thought about it, just I loved everything about it. I loved, like, the look of it. I loved the way it was shot. I loved the score. I loved the acting. And I just really like this sort of unconventional take on, taking some real people and what are sort of real life characters, and sort of holding a prism up to them, I guess. So it's almost kind of like you're trying to find another truth in it, not by being factual, but by sort of focusing more on what might have been going on inside people's heads and, having this sort of fine line between what's real and what's not real. So there was something about that I really liked. So this was based on a novel that came out in 2014, and it was written by Susan Scarfe Merrill. Now, the screenplay for this was written by Sarah Gubbins, and it was directed by Jacqueline Decker. Now, this is actually the first Jacqueline Decker movie that I've seen. I know that she got kind of a lot of buzz for Madeline's Madeline, which came out a year or two ago, something like that. And I had heard of another movie of hers, kind of an earlier one called Butter on the Latch, because I think Shudder had it for a while, although I never got around to watching it. So she's kind of a director that's known for having this sort of dreamlike, soft focus, handheld kind of style, which really, and it's kind of like experimental, you know what I mean? So I feel like that filmmaking style really suits this story really well, because, like I said, you're getting this kind of, sort of biopic aspects to it, but filtered through this sort of dreamlike gothic narrative. So, as I said, you're trying to get more into the psychology of the characters than showing what actually happened. So, what happens in this movie is that Elizabeth Moss, who plays Shirley Jackson, who, like I said, very famous horror writer. Anybody that knows anything about horror knows who Shirley Jackson is. Probably most famous nowadays for being the woman that wrote probably the best haunted house novel ever. Actually, not even probably, easily the best haunted house novel ever, The Haunting of Hill House, which has had tons and tons of adaptations, obviously the Netflix one being the best known. She was a really interesting figure, which is why I hesitate to call this a biopic, because there is a lot of stuff in the movie that is true to her. But in the movie, it's almost, I don't want to say it's a negative portrayal, but they do kind of play up a lot of her mental illness issues and a lot of things like that, which she did have. But I don't know. I just really like, so I would just say, just don't confuse the character with the actual person, even though the character in this movie is great. I mean, Elizabeth Moss, like, knocks it out of the park. She is just like something else in this movie. And it's like, even though the character in the movie is very, kind of vituperative, and she's very acid tongued, and she's like, doesn't put up with anybody's bullshit. I don't know. I found myself like really relating to her in a lot of ways, even though she's a very caustic character, but I still found her quite likable and sympathetic, even when she's being terrible and being cruel and stuff like that. So Shirley Jackson is living with her husband, Stanley Hyman. And they're living in Vermont near Bennington College, where Stanley works. That is actually true to life. Her husband, Stanley Hyman, was actually a well-regarded literary critic, although obviously she was much more famous than he was and, you know, made a lot more money than he did. But we'll get into that in a little bit. This story is set in, I assume it's supposed to be set in 1948 or 1949, because at the very beginning, there's a young couple, Fred and Rose Nemser, and they're actually traveling to Bennington College because Fred is going to be Stanley's teaching assistant. So they're going out there at the beginning, they're on the train, and Rose is reading Shirley Jackson's very, very famous short story, The Lottery. Now, The Lottery, this short story, it was published in 1948. I believe it was in summer. So I'm thinking that they're kind of establishing a timeline. Now, like I said, I don't worry too much about facts being related to, because they took a lot of stuff that was factual about her and about their life together and kind of put it all into this one time period, you know, because a lot of the stuff that happens in the movie, which is only set over a year or something, didn't actually happen until much later on. But anyway, so this young couple is coming there and they go to a party, you know, at Shirley Jackson's and Stanley Hyman's house. And they basically, Stanley invites them to stay at their house, like at least until they find another place or whatever. Now, interestingly, Shirley, who is, like I said, she's pretty cranky, she's suffering from agoraphobia, which she actually did in her real life. Although I don't think that the worst part of it manifested until later on in her life. She didn't live very long. She was only 48 when she died. She had like multiple health problems. She was a chain smoker, various other things. Later on, she had problems with alcoholism and whatnot. But this is set fairly early in her career. She had written one novel in 1948 that was well received, and she had written The Lottery, which is probably what kind of made her name. So this couple gets there, like I said, and Stanley is basically like, well, you know, Shirley is having some problems. She can't leave the house. She hasn't left the house in 2 months. She's having some writer's block. She doesn't want to get out of bed most days. And he's like, look, I have to work and it's, you know, I'm busy and I can't really look after her. So basically he says to this couple, well, you can stay in the house rent free if the wife, Rose, basically becomes a housekeeper and looks after Shirley, you know, while her husband Fred is working as a TA. So that's kind of what they do. Now, a lot of the shit, now Fred and Rose are fictional characters. They did not exist in real life, not the way they're portrayed, you know, in the movie. It was just kind of like a thing to sort of like look into the relationships between, and I think what they really want to examine in this movie is, one, not only Shirley Jackson's mental state, her, you know, the way she got her creative inspiration, but also in particular the inspiration for her novel Hangs a Man, which came out in 1951 and was based on, just like it says in the movie, was based on a real disappearance that had happened at Bennington College. This girl named Paula Jean Weldon, I think her name was, and she had disappeared off the campus. And that crime, fun fact, not so fun fact, is actually still unsolved. They never did find her. They never knew what happened to her. And for whatever reason, Shirley Jackson became obsessed with this case and based her novel Hangs a Man around it. Now, over the course of the movie, Rose reluctantly, you know, decides, okay, well, you know, I'm going to become a scullery maid at this house and like looking after this woman who Shirley Jackson at first is very, she's not real happy about Rose being there, because I think at first she perceives, because her husband Stanley, who is, as I said, he was quite well known in literary circles in his own right. He was a literary critic. I'm not sure how accurate this is to what his personality was like, but he comes across very much like kind of a blowhard. He's real like condescending. And he was a serial adulterer, which they do show in the movie. And as far as I know, that is true in real life as well. Shirley later on in life just finally gave up and said, fine, we're having an open relationship. Although I don't know if she ever, took advantage of that the way he did. He slept with a lot of his students. So there was a lot of that kind of shit going on. At first, she's very sort of, I don't want to say combative, but she's very catty. She's very cruel toward Rose, just because she's young and pretty. That's kind of like, I guess it's like the kind of thing Stanley goes for or whatever. And she kind of thinks, oh, maybe she's just another one of those girls. But Rose has a lot more going on. The fact was, she was actually a student prior to her marrying Fred. And she had also gotten pregnant and had to drop out of school, which she obviously has a lot of resentment about, a lot of resentment about that, having to now be a housekeeper at this house. Also, there's kind of a thing where once they move into the house, like Fred starts, drifting away from her. She thinks it's because, oh, I'm pregnant and I'm not attractive anymore, or whatever it is. But you find out later on, it's not really much of a spoiler because it's pretty obvious from the beginning that Fred is kind of following along his mentor Stanley's footsteps, and he started banging a bunch of the students as well, leaving these two women in the house alone a lot of the time to sort of maybe, I don't want to say like indulge each other's proclivities or whatever. But over time, even though Shirley is reluctant to befriend this girl, and even though she's obviously having like a lot of problems, a very strange sort of friendship develops between Shirley and Rose. It gets to a point where there's like a lot of sexual tension between the two. They never have sex or anything like that, but there is like a lot of, real heated like sexual, like flirtation and things like that, which I'm not sure if the dudes in the house really know anything about. But it's just a great like character study. And it's almost to the point too where Shirley is seeing Rose as maybe a stand-in for this girl that went missing that she's basing the novel around. And at some point, like when she has visions about Paula Jean Weldon, the woman that she's writing Hangs a Man about, her and Rose's faces start to become like interchangeable. So she's starting to see them like as the same thing, which, as I said, I think it's really interesting the way, because Fred and Rose are fictional characters, they didn't exist in real life. Some reviews and some, people on the internet that I read that were talking about this movie speculated that maybe the pair of them don't exist really in the context of the movie either, and that it's only Shirley's projection of this girl that she's trying to get a handle on because she's trying to write a novel based on her. So maybe they don't even exist at all. Or I've even seen one theory, and I actually kind of like this, that the young couple actually don't exist in any real sense, but are sort of a younger version of Shirley and Stanley. You know what I mean? Like a more younger, like an idealistic version, like back before they both became essentially the couple from Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf? Because there's a lot, if you like Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, you probably really, really dig this, because basically these two, Shirley and her husband Stanley, and like I said, I'm not really sure how accurate this is to what their actual relationship was like, but they seem to, they have this really, really weird sort of sick dynamic where she is obviously much more talented than he is. And as I said, this is kind of a little bit earlier on in her career, so they don't go too much into this. But later on in their careers, she earned like way more money than him, but he still held control over their finances. I mean, it was the 50s and the early 60s, so that's just kind of what dudes did, they just ran the household or whatever. And you could tell that Shirley, particularly in the movie, I don't know about real life, but had some kind of resentment about that because she was a lot more successful. And the weird thing too is that she I don't know if I want to say hostile, but like I said, they have this really strange relationship where I don't know if he's being cruel to her just because he's mad that she's more talented than him or better known than him, or if he actually is, digging in and being cruel to her because that's what spurs her to write. And maybe she needs that. They don't really make that clear, but it's like a fascinating, even if it was just the two of them and those, like, you didn't even have all the stuff with the other couple and everything. I mean, that's cool too, but even if you didn't have that, just like the dynamic between these two people is just so fascinating to watch. It's just like this really messed up, like, they've been married for so long. I think at this point, In real life, I think she married him in 1940. So I guess around the time of this movie, they would have been married 10 or 11 years. You know, so maybe he has like all this resentment about, you know, having to take care of her. He says things to like some of the women he's banging, like, "Oh, she'd die without me," which makes her really angry because she kind of feels like maybe he's treating her like a child or she's being like condescended to. And I think that the addition of Rose, the younger woman, who maybe can see that her marriage is going in the same way, starts to relate to Shirley a lot more because at one point she says to Stanley, like she's in there, you know, cleaning his fucking, you know, dishes and whatnot. And, you know, she's like, "Why do you treat her like that? You know, she's a grown person." It's like, you talk to her like she's a child, you treat her like she's a child. And he just kind of like brushes it off. So there's like a lot of really interesting kind of, you know, sexual and gender politics like going on in this too. Like what, you know, what was expected of a woman in the 1950s? You know, what was expected from a married couple, and like Shirley Jackson being really not like that, like unconventional in a lot of ways, in the fact that she would just like tell people they suck to their faces, but like in a really catty, like you know, vicious sort of way. Like she had this really, really great way with words. And it's particularly in this movie, it's like some of the shit that she says to some people just like fucking cracked me up, and I'm just like, oh my God, I love her. But you know what I mean? It's mean, but it was like still funny. So I think that that's kind of the thing that makes the two of them relate to one another is that, you know, Rose is also feels like she's sort of being stifled or limited by her, you know, what her role is supposed to be like. So that's kind of like where they find some common ground. And there's also a weird thing too, where Shirley might be just using her almost in the way that you would use like a muse or something like that, where it's like she likes her and she likes having her there. But she doesn't really have, she's not really a friend to her in the sense that, oh, she's loyal or anything like that, because she would probably, like, she says cruel things to her sometimes, she would stab her in the back, whatever. So it's kind of like this really strange, you know, the husband, Fred, he's kind of a good character too, but he's not in it much because he's kind of always working and out, you know, banging other co-eds and stuff. So he doesn't factor into it. But the relationship between Shirley and Rose is really, really fascinating. And then, like, the whole dynamic between the three of them, like Shirley, Rose, and Stanley, is like really, really interesting. Now, like I said, some people have brought up the fact that essentially this is not really a biopic because even though a lot of the stuff that's in it, yes, she was married to Stanley Hyman. Yes, he was a serial adulterer. Yes, she had problems with agoraphobia. Yes, she did base Hangs a Man on the disappearance of Paula Jean Weldon. All of that is true. You know, yes, they did live near Bennington College. Yes, Stanley did teach there and all this other kind of stuff. But some of the stuff is interesting that they left it out because at the point that this movie is supposed to be, like I said, it's supposed to be like somewhere between 1948 and 1951, like in those years someplace. At that point, Shirley and Stanley had three children. They ended up having four, like over their lives. But at this point in the narrative, they would have had three children. Now, the movie does not show them having any children. So in that way, it's like really fictionalized in that sense too, because having kids in the house would have like changed the whole dynamic, I guess, of their relationship. Interestingly too, later on, Shirley actually wrote a couple of books. One was called Life Among the Savages, and I can't remember what the other one was called, but they were kind of like memoirs, and they were essentially about her life, like raising four children, sort of like Irma Bombeck before Irma Bombeck, you know what I mean? Like kind of, so she was kind of like ahead of her time in that sense. But I thought it was an interesting decision to leave that part of her life out. And like I said, some of the stuff with her agoraphobia and her like severe mental illness and stuff, that really didn't manifest until later on in her life. But you know, like I said, this play is very fast and loose. They're trying to essentially tell a Shirley Jackson story or about a certain period in her life or about her psychology, framing it as though it was one of her stories. It has kind of like a very gothic feel to it, like in the old sense, like Southern Gothic type of story. So in that sense, don't watch this thinking that this is all like real, because a lot of it's not. Like, you know, little bits of it are, but it's wildly, wildly fictionalized. But as long as you're coming at it from there, knowing these are real people, but this isn't, you know, necessarily what happened, and some of these characters are just made up. This is easily, I think this was easily one of my favorite movies that I've seen in the past few years. There was just something about it that was so, I don't, it's just like the whole look of it, the whole dynamic between, all the characters, just this kind of like sick psychological shit going on. It's like the fucking last scene where she finishes the book because, all through the whole book, like Stanley is being so condescending to her. It's like, oh, you're not in any shape, you and your mental illness, you're not in any shape to write a novel at this stage, just like chill out. You can't do it. You can't even leave the house. And he's always like kind of digging at her like that. But then when she finishes the book at the end, Hangs a Man, and he reads it, and then him just saying that it was like a work of genius. And you can see this kind of like sad. I mean, he says all these like effusive things about it. It's like, oh, it's a work of genius and it's the best thing ever. But then he's like, well, I have some notes, of course. And she's kind of like, she's smiling, but she's kind of crying at the same time. She's like, of course, of course you have like some changes because you're. So he always has to have that little condescending dig in there. But the sad thing is that as much as she gets on his fucking case, and probably rightfully so, because he seemed like a dick out of in the movie. I don't know if he what he was like in real life. I don't blame her, actually. I probably would have gone crazy too if I'd have put up with that shit all the time. Just the fact that she's so independent and she's so unconventional. She's just kind of like her own person and she doesn't give a shit, if other people don't like it. And I mean, that's kind of saying something from a woman, in this time period, because that's just not something that you did. So the fact that she's like that, but she's still so wildly insecure that she can't leave her house, and she's still so wildly insecure that she still needs his approval for her writing, even though she knows it's good. She knows she's brilliant. And it's just like this really, really fascinating like juxtaposition, a really fascinating character study. And like I said, in that way, it's really good that they kind of juxtapose her, who's like, an older woman at this point, against young Rose, who, as I said, Rose can kind of see maybe her life going the same way. So it's kind of interesting to see them kind of like bounce off each other like that. But yeah, this movie at the moment, it's on Hulu, probably on some other platforms as well, but I watched it on Hulu. It was just a brilliant, brilliant movie. And it's like now I'm gonna have to go back and watch some of Jacqueline Decker's other movies because I've heard a lot of good things about Madeline's Madeline, but I haven't seen it yet. Like I said, Butter on the Latch, I think might have been on Shudder. I don't know if it's on there anymore. I just remember seeing it a while back, and I just never got around to watching it. So probably, I think that's a lot more experimental than this one. This one is experimental in the sense that, it has like some kind of dreamlike sequences and it sort of blurs fiction and reality a little bit, but I don't want to oversell that because I don't want people thinking, oh, it's like some ponderous, arty farty kind of, it's obviously an art film, but it's really, really easy to get into. It's very like the characters are very engaging. The story is very engaging. You have this kind of background of like this missing girl, and then you have like this weird like dynamic in this house. So if you like, gothic fiction, if you like Shirley Jackson at all, if you're just really into that kind of stuff, you will probably love this. I mean, I just really liked everything about it. I liked the look of it. The acting performance is amazing. Elizabeth Moss was amazing in this. I mean, she's pretty much amazing in everything. The score was amazing. Like, use of music was amazing. And it's just a great, great film. Don't, like I said, don't go into it expecting to be scary or expecting it to be a horror movie. It's sort of like, I guess gothic drama is the closest thing. It's like a psychological character study. It does have some psychological horror elements, kind of, in the sense that it's like has some eerie or creepy kind of stuff going on in it, but it's basically a drama but with gothic elements. So it's not a horror movie or anything like that. It's just about a horror writer and about inspiration in that sense. So, if you can see where I'm coming from. So yeah, I would definitely, definitely recommend it to anybody that is at all interested in anything that I just said. Great film. I just can't say enough good things about it. I'll probably want to watch it again at some point as well. So that'll do it for this Flickers of Fear, and I'll see you on the next one. Bye, you guys.